various work, and I read the book, and Matt and I spoke about counseling. I have a background in psychology, and so I was kind of interested in things like that. But after I had gone through this whole thing that one summer, I became very much profoundly impressed with the quality of Larry's book when I went back to read it later on, because here was a man who had put into words and conceptualized some of the very things that I had gone through. And I really thought there was just that sense of rightness and conviction about that whole matter. Well, the following summer, Larry put on his first IBC, a week-long experience like this, in Boca Raton, Florida. My wife and I had the privilege of attending there. And we came back from that experience further convinced this was the vehicle that we wanted to use to try to train lay counselors. And so we came back, and the following winter, which had been the first part of 81, we began our first class. Brian was in that one, and Johnny, where'd you go? Johnny Snow is right here. She's another gal from our church, was in that group as well. And we've been through a lot of things together, some of which we'll talk about today, and things we've learned, and we might have also entitled this seminar, you know, What Not to Do. We could have put these two together, I think, a little bit, because we learned a lot of things as well from our mistakes. So over the years, we'd like to share with you some of the things we've been through. We've had three different classes now that have gone through this. It takes about a year to 14 months that we've taken people through this since 1981. I did the first two classes, and Brian has just finished the third class a few weeks ago. So we're just really looking forward to what we have to share. Maybe you want to say a word, Brian? Or?
Oh, just very briefly. Just to stop you wondering the accent, but you might hear there is an 8-year-old English accent. came here 8 years ago from London. I'm in the nuclear engineering department at Oregon State University, which also throws some people. I hope it doesn't throw you. It is possible to be a nuclear engineer and a Christian and get involved in lay council training.
Right.
You can
love atoms as well as love people, right? Expertise is health physics, so I can tell you all about that. So, really enjoyed Brian's friendship. With this experience, we have a couple of hours together. I don't want to just stand here and blab away at you about things you don't care about, and I hope we'll have a good chance to interact a bit. So what I'd like to know from you, maybe just we can't take the time to really go out and spend time with each one of you getting to know where you are, but could you tell me how many of you already have some kind of lay counselor training ministry going in your local church? Because that's the focus that we're going to talk about. So we have maybe 40% of you or something like that. How many of you don't but are considering starting one? Okay. A little slightly less number, but still a fair amount. Okay, of those of you that have been involved in a lay counselor training ministry, is it safe to assume that you're here to try to pick up a few things, maybe a few other pointers, not necessarily to try to completely revamp your whole thing or whatever, but hopefully just pick up a few thoughts. Some of you that are here maybe looking to start something, I'm trusting that are looking to pick up some ideas. We're not going to try to set ourselves up as a model. Okay, what we're going to try to do is to alert you to some issues that you need to think through and make decisions about. And we'll tell you how we try to deal with some of those things, but you may not like our answers at all, and that's fine, but you need to think through those same issues, and there may be other issues that we haven't thought about that we ought to add to our list. So that's primarily what I'm trying to do. So if at any time something isn't clear or you want to offer another point, I hope we'll be able to have some good interaction as we move along. We will try to take a break about halfway through. It seems like a good point to kind of get up and stretch a bit so you don't have to endure the idea of sitting there for 2 hours straight. I don't like to stand for 2 hours straight for that matter, so we'll enjoy that together. Okay, why don't we just pause now and begin with a word of prayer and trust God to direct our time, Kelly. Father in heaven, we're very thankful that you have given us this grand privilege of just being here, Lord, of having the opportunity to learn more about you, to do some very in-depth self-examination about our own lives, our own walk with you. Father, we want very much to be used of you. It's a great privilege to think that you, as our Lord, would desire to use us as your instruments. We're so mindful of how inadequate we are. We're mindful of how undeserving we are of anything that you might grace us with. And yet, Lord, we come to you now with a sense of dependence and a real desire that you might take these couple of hours together, mold us in some way for your kingdom's glory. We ask it in Jesus' name. Amen. Okay, now we're going to try to put this up on the overhead, and it may not be all that visible from the back, but how are we doing? Is that sort of... It's in the book, if you don't. I'm just going to... You can just follow along in your book, but this is just for, so that we will kind of halfway know where we are as a group. I'll just have that running down the line. There's nothing that you're not going to see here that you don't already have in your book, okay? Just so we'll know together where we are. Now, it seemed to me in reflecting about lay counselor training, that one of the things we need to get clear on right away is the whole issue of philosophy of ministry. Now, I trust that's not a foreign term to you. That it's, when we talk about philosophy of ministry, we're talking about the basic ways in which we go about doing ministry in general, and then lay counselor training would be one aspect of ministry in general. And we just to stop and think about that a little bit. What is my own philosophy of ministry? What are the values that guide me as I minister to people? And how compatible are those values and those ways with the church that I'm in? And if we've got a big difference here, we've got problems. We need to understand those things. What is my church committed to? A typical cleavage will be a very relational, people-centered kind of ministry versus a very program-oriented type of ministry. Okay, that's a typical kind of tension you'll find in churches. Another typical type of tension you'll find will be in the view of a pastor. How many of you are pastors or associates or something here? Okay. You probably struggle with, am I a priest in the sense that the people watch me do the ministry? Or am I an equipper where I equip the people to do the ministry? You may face pressures in that. You may want to be the equipper. The people want you to be the one who does it all. Okay. Or maybe you're the other way around. That's an issue you just need to sort out. And I find, from where I come from, that Ephesians 4 is a very critical passage in my understanding of what ministry is all about. I believe that passage, particularly from verses 11 through 16, quite clearly teaches that the role of the pastor-teacher is to equip the saints, that is, the people of God, for the work of service. They're the ones that are primarily given the ministry. I'm the equipper. I have to come alongside and help them fulfill their God-given role. And I'm told in verse 15 and 16, that if each member of the body of Christ is functioning properly and properly joined to the head, taking its directions from Christ, and working together in a cooperative manner, that the body will be built up in love. And that's what I want to see happen. That's what guides me as I work with people. There's a real priority then on equipping. Part of that equipping has to do with two key aspects, truth and relationships. I've got to have the truth of God communicated at a deep level, and relationships are central. Read 1 Thessalonians 2, excuse me, to see the priority that Paul placed on relationships, the personalized attention to people, communicating the truth to them in a patient, godly manner. Those are critical things that guide me as I work with people in the ministry. That's a question you need to have thought through. I don't want to spend a great deal of time on it, but you need to understand that. We don't just jump into counselor training without a thought to our overall philosophy of ministry, where I am as a minister, where my church is, and how those fit together. Okay, so if you've got some problems there, you need to be working at those, some patient teaching and discussion with your leadership. All right, secondly, moving down the line here quickly, the whole matter of the philosophy of counseling. Where am I coming from? Have I bought into the IBC model? Have I bought into some other model? Where am I in this whole thing of the medical, moral, relational business that we talk about in Section A of the seminar? Where am I in that whole thing? Where is my church? How do we fit together? How are we going to relate on those matters? Those are important points. Now, I'd like to talk a little bit more about where we are under probably question 4 that we'll come to in a minute. But you may have a certain part of the IBC model that you think is deficient in some way. Maybe something's missing. You'd like to add something to it. Okay, what is it? How would you add it? How would it fit or not fit? Do you have radical disagreements or not? Okay, are you following me now? Get the kinds of questions I want you to be thinking about a little bit. Okay. Another aspect of this thing is, what are the expectations? What expectations does my church have of a lay counselor training ministry? For example, it may well be that your church is expecting a professional clinic type of thing to emerge from your training procedure. Maybe you're in a large city and there are clinics around, and that's the model that you operate under. So we're going to have, I know of the churches in the Seattle area, for example. We're from Corvallis, Oregon, and I know churches in the Seattle area that have almost a volunteer clinic run out of their church. Okay? Maybe that's the expectation that your people would have. Perhaps they might expect a more informal sort of network of relationships where counseling is done more informally, just naturally, automatic groupings happening rather than a structured, formalized approach. We began, I believe, with kind of the clinic model. I think we came on with a lot of idealism and the fact that we're just going to be able to handle anything and everything, and these lay people are going to just do the job, and we're not going to need to have a lot of pros around, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. As we did the training, we discovered that the relational model was not only preferred by our trainees, but it was wise as well for a lot of other reasons. And this represents, I think, a big change in our thinking. And I wanted right off to maybe smash a little idealism, if there's any out there in this whole thing. Talking with Larry briefly yesterday morning, he wanted to be sure that point got emphasized, and I agree. There's the idea, I think, in some of the early training that we began getting through IBC, that anything is, you know, the local church is sufficient totally. Okay, now, yes, I believe those kinds of things, but, hey, we're not necessarily equipped to handle everything that comes down at us, and we need to know that and be able to know how to pass it on appropriately and when to do so and when not to do so. You're going to find a lot of discouraging things. We've taken a number of people through the training, and the handful of those who have remained with what we might call the counseling type of ministry, the one-on-one relationship type of thing, are very few compared to the number that have started with the whole thing. It's a costly, demanding type of thing. Donnie, can I tell a story on you for a moment here? All right. I recall this was probably 2 years, 3 years into our program, and I was home sick, and I had referred a lady to Johnny to do some counseling with, and I'd met with her a time or two, and I thought everything was pretty well screened, and, you know, it would be fine for Johnny to handle this lady. And about Monday morning when I was laying sick there, Johnny called at home, and she said, her husband, by the way, is a former military man, and she says, one of your troops just got blown away, sir, reporting in. And that was a lot of fun. You know, we began to look through what happens when somebody goes out there and tries and has a difficult time. Well, what do you fall back, regroup, reassess the situation, you know, send it back in. And that's been a lot of fun, interacting in that kind of way. It's real challenging. So, okay. Another aspect to think about in my relationship, my philosophy of counseling ministry and the church's philosophy of counseling ministry is, does my church, or do I myself, regard the counseling that we would be doing as primarily directed to the people of our own local body, our own church fellowship, immediate folks that are members or active attenders, or is there a community-wide focus or something in between? And that's something we need to think through. I think what we encountered, for example, early on, some folks were fearful that we were going to have people lined up down the boulevard wanting counseling from all over the place, you know, and we were just going to kind of be the place where all the problems came. And there was a little bit of a fear of that operating among some of our leadership. So how do we handle that kind of tension? Maybe you're someone who really wants to reach out and reach people who are outside of Christ, outside of the church. Well, how open is your body to that? Are they willing to give you, if you're a pastor, are they willing to give you the kind of time, support you financially, office support, space, the whole thing that's involved in carrying on that kind of ministry? Or do they agree that that's a priority with you? If you're not able to do it, do you have enough staff to do it? Okay. Look at some of those issues on the front end, because if you start doing your job well, word's going to get around. And pretty soon you're going to have people calling you and saying, hey, can you counsel me? And you find out, you know, you don't know who they are because they're not part of your church. And what's your policy going to be on that? Okay, think that sort of thing through. We've been kind of necessity due to pastoral time limitations and all of that, we've had to kind of set up a three-level priority system, so to speak, where we first of all focus on the people that are involved in our church. That's our first priority. We want to make sure we're taking care of them. Secondly, we would reach out to those who do not know the Lord or who do not have a church home. And our third priority would be people who already have some kind of church relationship who could get their needs met perhaps through their own local body. And we've had to sort of set things up like that. Now, with lay people, one of the benefits has been is that there's a lot more freedom there. For example, Brian can counsel people from wherever. He's not accountable to, so to speak, the church elders like I am for the use of his time. And he's much more free to wing it in that kind of way than I would be. But that's an issue. If you're not going to take somebody, where are you going to send them and why and how? And we'll come on to that a little bit more. We'll talk about some of the criteria for referring people. Okay, are we clear so far? Let me just pause here for a moment. Any questions or comments at this point? Yes, your name is?
Virgil.
Hi, Virgil.
How do you carry out those priorities?
How do I carry out those three priorities? What's the process we go through to sort those three out? What I've done is I've informed the secretaries who take the calls basically where I'm at. And they will generally try to ask a few questions without being prying as to where the person is. If it's not a name that they recognize right off, and they will know the people, then they'll ask, how did you happen to call us? Something along that line. And that will usually evoke a story of, well, so-and-so sent me, or I go to this church, or we'll get something like that. I try not to have them press too much. If they sense there's any kind of reservation, they don't want to say too much to the secretary or whatever, I say, fine, just get the information, a name, and if I'm not available, a name and a phone number, and I'll call back. Then I will try to pursue that and find out just where they are in that priority, and maybe a little bit about what the problem is, so I know if I feel equipped to tackle that particular matter that they're sharing. And then from there, I just try to, if it fits in with where I'm at on my priorities, then I will try to work them in. If not, I will try to make an appropriate referral. But that's approximately how we go about it. Okay. Thanks, Virgil. Mm-hmm.
Jen, I'm Doug Barker.
Hi, Doug.
What's your
pastor? All right, I'm associate pastor at Northwest Hills Church in Corvallis, Oregon. And primarily, I guess the way to characterize the big sombrero I wear sometimes is family ministry, but it involves a lot of kinds of things. I'm involved in overseeing the Sunday school ministry, do the counseling and counselor training, essentially, look after home Bible study groups, things of that sort.
How many are there on your staff?
There are five of us.
Average
Sunday is around 600 or a little more. A fair number of college students. Corvallis is the home of Oregon State University. So a fair number. Fairly young body. It started in 1968, so we're 18 years old this year. Yes?
We have a lot larger system problem.
Okay.
And the secretary is only able to really do the wonderful work he's done. Because there's so many calls, and you're also not able to do that. Do you recommend that in my case? I think the priority is really good. Do you recommend in my case that as people are delegating different counselors that I have in my staff, that their first duty with them is to ascertain where they are and go from there. In other words, that they see the decency as opposed to rely on secretaries, or especially me, because I don't have time for a call or whatever it is.
Okay.
That a possibility.
So you're looking for some ideas on how to go about screening. In a larger situation, you have a multiple staff, and are you the guy that primarily oversees the counseling ministry? Okay. Does one secretary handle the incoming calls?
Well, we have four that handle all the calls, and usually the first available counselor gets, unless they require a woman or something like that, or
night
or day or something
like that.
It's a very large call for counseling.
Right.
And that's a problem because I Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. Well, there may be some way, just thinking out loud here with you, there may be some way in which you could establish a screening procedure, perhaps training some of your secretaries in some basic things, or perhaps developing a key staff person or two who would come alongside to help do some of that screening might be another possibility. But it seems like maybe all of you as a staff ought to get together and decide how you're going to do that, work out some cooperative strategy, because you can get, you know, the right hand doesn't know what the left hand's doing sometimes in a large situation like that. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sam.
I have a question, guys. Is the council load greater than the person or no? In a nutshell, out of last year, the council staff is a month of the year. You could use probably about 1,500 counselors and maybe still, kind of like having a dirt bag, put in, put out for the work for weeks.
Yeah.
Like that. You keep it down to about 10 counselors, 10 counselors. And they are packed, but they're all doing it not as a case or anything else. They're all doing it, you know, for the college year. So yes, we are integrated, and yes, we are full, but it's like I said, it's the brunt of the firm hole. We don't, you know, not done, you don't keep on adding hours and counselors on all the time.
Okay.
That's better. Well, yeah. The reason that I ask that is that the, you know, to establish a priority is a very difficult thing to do. And in some sense, in some sense, maybe one of the things you must do for research in terms of even first growth is providing for the needs of the community. And that's a very valid thing on part of the church. So if your church don't just provide the counseling program, the people are going to come to use the counseling. And we'll have more of an attitude of coming to you for church. So then you become an avenue of church growth.
Right.
So, you know, if you sell that to your board, it means you program growth and value. Rather than, priority is not to make it work without making people angry and sad and all that kind of thing. But if you can open the door to many people who come through, you have a lot of people coming to church. Right. That's never been our problem. The problem is that we would rather have people come to pastors and not to counselors. Because in their minds, it's a totally different thing. We have more than 50 pastors training pastor people in the church. And we want people to be going to those people rather than come to one-on-one pastor relationships. We have the pastors in all homes throughout the community. You know, we run new churches, small churches. We want people to be going there and be ready to do other things one-on-one because, like I say, really definitely to handle our community. It's a huge community.
Right.
And there's been a problem getting people in.
Okay, so maybe the thing to do there is you guys need to kind of sort out your focus, your priority, and how you're going to go about establishing, how you're going to communicate that, and maybe educate your people to what you're trying to get accomplished, and see what their concerns are, and why won't they go there? You know, maybe there's some unmet need that they're talking about. Okay, we need to kind of move along. Yeah. Sure, you're welcome. Yes. You're Robert?
Hi, Robert.
Hey.
Exactly what they want to be knowing from,
party with odd members of birth or any discussion down the line. And I don't, I've now restricted only 10% of the outstanding patients I have to grow at 10%. And what I've also found out, I take more people from other churches or other counselors. I have no less of them as far as keeping them accountable.
Right. Right. That's an issue. The fee thing is an issue, and I've had to deal with that one too. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, you see what you're dealing with now. You're taking this issue of what is our focus of ministry going to be, and you're wrestling with it, and you're coming up with some priorities, and it's something you have to work through. Lots of little ideas like this we've got bouncing around, but there's some. That's an issue that needs to get worked out, and you'll address it with whether it's a screening procedure of some kind, phone call, a data form, a fee structure. There's lots of good ideas, okay? But that's, if I could just summarize where I think I'm hearing this talk. Yes?
I'm just dealing with, I'd like to hear some discussion on holding people accountable to their counseling. Is this your book assigned for that, or are you going to get into
that? I hadn't planned to in that particular point, although, you know, once you hang on to that, if we have some time toward the end, then we can come back to that question. Because that is one of the benefits of a local church-based counseling ministry. You have more of an input than you do in the kind of the outside clinic setting. And I think that's one of the real pluses. But maybe we can talk about that a little more. Okay, we'll move along here down to question three. What my goal would be in training lay counselors, not using the term goal here in the way that Larry does in the goal-desire distinction, but maybe a better term would be, what is my objective? How would I describe the finished product, that is, in terms of the personal character and ministry of the trainees that I work with? Now, as I mentioned earlier, we had a pretty idealistic view of this. You may have some ideals as well. You know, looking for the pro kind of as your finished product. Our people responded with some predictable reluctance when faced with that kind of expectation. And so we've had to learn to back off a bit on that. A lot of desire for people to participate in less formal, less structured counseling relationships, like through friendships or business relationships, teaching type situations, that kind of thing. I think we would categorize our goals, maybe in terms of the finished product, how we're deploying a person in ministry, under two main categories. One would be the preventative, and the other would be the therapeutic. That's a couple of big words, but basically what we're trying to do is to look for ways to prevent problems from happening. So can we deploy some of our trainees in those kinds of ministries, training classes, enrichment courses of one kind or another? And pipeline kinds of things on both ends, preventative and therapeutic. Might also involve one-on-one counseling. It might involve involvement in support groups. Various sorts of options like that. Now, when we talk about personal character, I think that's an important issue. You recall Larry saying last night that in his view, and I would agree, that the most critical element is the personal character of the counselor. Not so much his techniques or abilities or skills or whatever, but it's that personal character understood in a very rich sense. So anything's only going to be as good as the people who run it. And we can talk about all kinds of nice techniques and all kinds of nice plans for training lay counselors, but it comes down to the character of the individual. I can mention some obvious kinds of things, Christ-like quality, personal maturity, non-defensiveness, having dealt with one's own issues. Some of you talked this morning in your video presentations about the whole subject of pull, being aware of those issues in you and how your pull operates on other people. A critical thing that needs to get worked through. A sense of compassion, as a moral integrity. Can a person keep a confidence? Is he or she known as the blabbermouth? That kind of thing. You don't want any gossips in your course. So we're trying to select people for these kinds of qualities at the outset because we believe, in many ways, spiritual giftedness is a big part of the whole matter. You want to be looking for people who have gifts in the area of counseling. we've seen people kind of come at this thing from two different directions. When I'm doing some training, when I'm doing some screening of potential trainees, what I often discover is I find people coming from two different directions. One, a heavy compassion orientation, okay, a focus on relationship, or a focus on truth. You know, I want to care for these people, they're hurting, I want to get alongside them, that whole thing. And you have the other side, the exhorter, you know, want to straighten these lives out and, you know, get them lined out the way they ought to be, sort of thing. And what we're trying to do is bring those two together, pull people together. And sometimes in your training classes, we found this experience, we'll find the exhorters thinking that the compassion people are, you know, Casper Milquetoast and easy pushovers, and we'll find the compassion people thinking that the exhorters are hard-nosed, you know, and uncaring and unsensitive and all that. And we've had some interesting clashes, I would say, at times when we've been discussing an approach to a particular case study or something like that, and we'll say, well, no, this way, and no, this way, and back and forth we go. That's healthy because I think we'll learn from each other, but you'll have to, you know, watch how you moderate that whole thing. Okay, so a thing about goals, getting clear on that. I think one of the things that probably caused us a bit of distress is that we didn't make that real clear at the outset. We kind of came in expecting that everybody was going to become a one-on-one shrink, I suppose, and we didn't have a clear idea that, hey, there were other ways. We talked about it, but we didn't really firm it up. And I think our people labored under that sort of heavy expectation. Yes? Mark, is
yes,
it?
Yes, my name is Mark.
Hi, Mark.
Do you see gifts being used, like one person having a gift from another person, another person having a gift from another person? And if they are to discuss a particular situation, how do you handle the confidentiality if you're having several people discuss a need? Looking from the vantage point of the gift.
Okay. We generally did not in class discuss people that we were currently counseling. We would more deal with some of the case study kinds of things, more the ones you might find in the IBC manual. If you were a person that I had you counseling someone else, I might be meeting with you from time to time to find out how it's going in your work with so-and-so. And then in that context, we would do so, but the person that you're working with would know that that's the way it's set up. Okay. Now, that becomes a particular issue in a local church setting, and that's a real delicate one to handle, and you ought to be aware, I assume you are aware of that whole subject. Now, I can't say that we're perfect at that, because there have been occasions when something would come up, I would do all I could to make sure that details were not mentioned, or names were not mentioned. If someone did ask me a question, you know, they'd say, well, I'm working with so-and-so, and what would you have me do when we're in a class setting? Okay, I would try, without getting into a lot of stuff, try to get some direction. But a lot of times I would kind of come up short and say, well, perhaps we better talk later, if I thought we were getting into a point where we might be compromising some confidences or that sort of thing. But that's a real sticky one. You want to be real careful of it, because you could burn the thing down real fast. Yes, Sam?
I'm interested in you wrestle with this. I'm reading from you that you vacillated from one position to another on what you really wanted your counselors to be when they were done. What have you found that works?
In terms of the finished, what we were...
The counselor, once the counselor's gone through the training...
Okay.
What are you looking for?
Well, I think we're looking for the two basic things I tried to mention were the preventative and the therapeutic. Okay, so we want to have people that are equipped to do some teaching. We've got some folks that are involved, for example, in our marriage enrichment training classes, or we have a preparing for marriage class for either engaged or pre-engaged people. They'll use some of the skills they've gotten. We've done the encouragement course a number of times, so we have a lot of people that are kind of tuned into that sort of thing, not as well as we'd like in some ways, but, you know, basically there. So we try to do some of that on the preventative side. On the therapeutic side, we do have people that are involved in actually doing some one-on-one work. You know, Brian's been doing some. I know Johnny works with some. And maybe you guys want to speak to some of that, how you've actually done some of these things one-on-one. Would that be appropriate at this point? Or?
Do you certify people? Do you say Brian is a certified counselor from mine?
We haven't gotten into that kind of a public way and given a little, you know, certification of some kind. We haven't gone that particular route.
Do you have a different course of instruction for the therapeutic people than the preventative?
Basic same stuff to start with, but I think what changes at that point is the more supervision that gets involved and the more intense involvement. Where they come out to be deployed. Some would be involved maybe in a teaching situation or a discipling situation. Others would be involved in a counseling situation, one-on-one, traditional one-on-one. Okay. You guys want to add anything to that? Any answers?
Well,
okay.
Part of it boils down, I think, to part of the question that we were talking about before. One of the, we're walking up the road with Larry, and he said, what was the question he asked? Does lay counselor training work? Or
something like that.
Lay counselor training doesn't work. One of these sort of off-the-wall type of get your thinking type questions. And that's really one of the things that I think we've been struggling with to a large extent. To what extent has it worked? You know, we've been working on this for several years, and a lot of us have put a lot of time and effort into it, but really, what have we got to show for it? And in many ways, I think it could be truly said, on the surface, very little. We do not have a counseling center where people come and are tossed out or passed on to a particular type of counselor. Although that was at one stage our goal and our ideal, as Ken said, turns out to be that's really probably not the best way to go in the end. But it's really hard to say, what do we really have? What we really have out there is a bunch of people who have been through the training that are being involved in the ministry with which they feel the Lord has led them to work. And that's very much the objective from which I come from. I very much feel that it's my responsibility to do what I feel the Lord is telling me to do, whatever ministry that is. Now, this particular thing, from my viewpoint, have a heart for people, want to get involved in people's lives, and so for me, it was more in terms of some one-on-one type counseling and for training others. I'm a teacher. I enjoy teaching. I enjoy training. There's a lot of fulfillment from that. There's a ministry from that. And so I think after people have gone through the training, where we're at right now, is I challenge them and say, where would you have the Lord, where would the Lord have you work? In what ministry would you have would the Lord have you work? And get involved in that and use the skills and the techniques and the heart desires that you have for the Lord and for people in that ministry. And so it's a very ephemeral type of thing. It's very hard to put a concrete words on what we've actually got. I think, and we'll never know until we get to heaven, that there's been some effect in people's lives and in the church as a result of the training. But, you know, we want to shatter some ideas here. Don't go away thinking that it's all going to be nice and you're going to have a whole bunch of people and you can farm other people out who are going to be trained. It doesn't work that way, really. A lot of us are cutthroat in some circumstances. But for us, I don't think it has.
Yeah, we do some of that. It's not like we don't do some of that. Part of this, I think, also springs from our philosophy of ministry. Part of the thing we try to do is to screen people who already, and bring them into the program, who already have some kind of counseling ministry going on. I can think of a gal in our church, for example, who is a former female athlete at the university who relates a lot to some other female athletes that are currently at the university, a number of whom have homosexual problems. Okay, she's already into that. What we're doing is equipping her to do that ministry better. Okay, so if our philosophy of ministry says we want to deploy people wherever God has them and make them, equip them for the ministry that they're in, then we're going to try to serve them instead of getting them to fit into our idea of what a structure might be for that ministry. As a result, that's fairly diffuse. It's a little bit hard to quantify and measure and all that. So there's a tension we operate under there, I think, at that point. Yes, in the back. Your name, please?
Bill.
Hi, Bill. Yeah, I'd have to say, yes, there is a distinction in our church. I'm not entirely pleased with it, because I believe, as I understand what we're talking about here, we're really talking about discipling. Okay? But getting that across, see, our church was built under a certain concept of what discipling is. and you don't change that, you know, rapidly. So we have to kind of build the process a little differently here. But that's where I'm coming from. You know.
So your preference is to see it all, really.
Oh, sure.
Under one umbrella, you would be training people who would be training them more specifically in the science
field. Sure.
One-on-one, small groups, or mini surgeries.
Oh, yeah. Philosophically, I'm right there. Yeah. Yeah, but putting that into practice is another story. You have to take time. Yes, Johnny, you want to add a point? Good.
And you answered it, not being on that staff watch, because I see before I do, maybe it's just having a belly discipling and counseling always
right. Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
That's how I operate.
Right. That's how Johnny does her ministry. Yeah.
Rebelliously.
Right. No. Okay, no. But no, Johnny has a gift for really putting those two together, and she's doing the kind of thing that I wish more were doing. Okay, so I'm pleased by that.
But, yeah, that's what I really appreciate about Larry and what he's trying to do. It sounds like what he's supposed to be doing. It seems like he has this idea of trying to just take it down on the pieces.
Right. Mm-hmm. No, that's not just an instructive model, not at all. Yeah. Okay, sure, go ahead. Neil, is it?
Okay. Find your terms that your church serves a particular definition of discipleship. What is that? What do you call it?
Yeah, okay, we could. I'll try to keep that short because I don't want to get off into a long discussion on that. But basically, I think we had the idea that you could give, take a person, primarily in this case, we start out with men back when the church first began. Take them through a series of 26 different topics, whatever it was, in a six-month period of time, and you have produced a well-rounded disciple, so to speak. It's kind of the mentality. Okay, you cover things from how to become a Christian right on through to how to reproduce, and there's all this stuff in between, and you have a certain kind of thing. You meet with a guy one-on-one, and you work this through over a period of time, 6 months to a year. Then he goes around and does that. You take on somebody else, and that's the way it begins to go. That's the kind of how it was operating. All right. All right. Let's slide along here. If we're let's see. Are we number four? Are we? Yeah. Okay. I'm getting ahead of myself here a little bit. What givens? Do you understand what I mean by givens? So like in geometry class, you know, that's what you start with. Okay. The things you have that are already there, they're in place, and now you've got to deal with them. What givens do I have? In my church or community. Now, we've already talked about one, a concept of discipling, for example. The question I'm asking is, how will previous training efforts or competing philosophies or other counselors in the community or general attitudes toward counseling and so forth affect whatever plans I may have? All right? Are you aware of what's happened before you came to that particular church? Are you aware of what's going on in the community? Are your blinders on where you don't really know what the context in which you're trying to minister. If so, you need to open up and find out some things. Get around and ask around and find out what's going on. We were blessed, in a sense, with having very few givens to deal with when we started. We had a previous training effort that had happened under an associate maybe a couple of years before I came. I came in 1977, who had done some Jay Adams things. And about the time I was trying to get started on this, we also had another man who was still on staff, who was very staunchly a Jay Adams man, and thankfully didn't raise too many questions or holler too loud when I began to do some things that were just a little, you know, close, but a little different. I mean, a little more open to spoiling the Egyptians, as Larry would say, in effective biblical counseling, rather than a pure nothing buttery approach. So we had a few things to have to work through. We have a liberal pastoral counseling center in town. We have some transnational analysis types of things being done by an ex-associate pastor in town, that kind of thing. We also, that would be maybe on the downside of some things. On the plus side, we have a very mutually supportive relationship with a former member of our staff who's involved in what I would say some very level-headed discernment and deliverance type of counseling. Tom is our friend of ours, and he has a real ability to discern when there is maybe it's just some extra spiritual forces operating. I don't know where you are. I won't get into a long discussion about demons and spirits under every rock and all that kind of thing. But Tom has a real ability to discern some of those kinds of things operating in people's lives. And he's not one that finds them lurking behind every bush by any means. But it's been good to have some interaction where we've seen some real evidence of this kind of activity going on. And it's been neat to have an opportunity for Tom to bounce some people my way and me to bounce some Tom's way, just to kind of check those areas out from time to time. And that's been a good, positive, supportive kind of relationship. But I wanted to mention that as well, because I believe there's a real place for that. If you look at the IBC model closely, particularly in effective biblical counseling, you recall the role of Satan in that model. And this is just kind of fitting into that particular part, maybe opening that area up a little bit more. So what kind of givens do you have in your community that needs to be dealt with? Yes, Bill? Yeah, that would be one. Yeah, if you have a guy that says, listen, all psychologists are out to lunch, you know, and I want anything to do with them, and you come in and talk about some psychological concept, or you come on in a psychological kind of way in his view, and you're an associate staff member, well, yeah, you get fired. Okay, maybe it's pretty strong. You know. So there's that whole mentality to deal with. You need to be aware of that. Okay. All right. What are the comments? Along here. All right. How will I ensure church support for that ministry? I believe this is very essential, and maybe just touches on Phil's question here. I believe it's essential that you get some kind of official approval from your church's governing body, that your pastors, your pastoral staff, be in agreement about this thing, that it be thoroughly talked through. Take the time to do that. Because you will have problems. And even with the best of support and the best of backing, there's going to be flack, there's going to be difficulties, and if you don't have the authority base behind you, the first problem that comes up, they're going to say, aha, I told you so, bang, and you're dead, you know. And you're just not going to fly. So you need to have a good support. I believe pulpit support's important. That can give your ministry some visibility. If your pastor's not behind it, not willing to refer to it in a constructive and supportive manner, you're gonna be kind of the stepchild of the ministry. He needs to be sold on in some way. Yes, Bill?
You talked about discipleship and counseling. Now, if I was to present, I want to use a kind of a quick on words and say, I've got this discipleship program going on. And in my mind, I'm going to be doing counseling and training to the counseling. But that reminds me of the discipleship program to the life of Christ.
Yeah. And what about that?
Well, would that be like an appropriate way to maybe approach even changing words? That leads on to six.
Well, it does, but it also raises another question because yeah, that's a good way of putting it. To put it plainly. Because I think it's important that your pastor know not only you're going to do discipling, but here's how I define that term and here's what I plan to do. And just lay that out. Because the word will get around. You know, hey, what's Phil doing? He said he was discipling, but what's going on here? You know, and then something will come around the horn and they'll talk to him about it, and pretty soon he'll have three or four people that have talked to him and haven't talked to you, and then he's kind of getting a little uneasy about where you are, and eventually it gets to him long enough that he'll call you in 6 months later. And then crash, boom, you know, that's kind of the thing that can happen, unless there's a lot of real openness. From the outset. Yes. Hi, Ted.
Is counseling not sort of a range of needs, such that people are, questions referred to your comments before, the whole business of training pastors and the pastors aren't being used, and so now we're training counselors, people are gravitating towards counselors to the best they're able to go. I'm just wondering about the whole question of training new counselors, period, whether we should be putting it under a different because people are really giving up the wrong idea of what it's about.
That does lead us to number seven. What are we going to call this? I mean, number six, rather. What are we going to call this thing? when you use the word counselor, what kinds of images come to mind? The couch, right? The guy with the notebook, you know, the goatee, you know, all those kinds of things that come to mind. And you say, okay, we're going to start a lay counselor training class. And they say, I'm not going to be one of those, you know. And so one of the things, when we took the Institute of Biblical Counseling in 1980 and we were considering starting this program, I caught Dan Allender for lunch around the table one day and I said, give me some pointers on how to start. You know, he'd been doing some things at his church there in Florida at the time, and he gave me a number of things not to do, and I can't remember all of them, but one of them that he said was, don't call it counselor training. That's probably one of the things he's saying at the workshop this afternoon I think he's doing on that. And he's right. And that's an excellent point. So try to avoid that term. I wish there was a better one, you know, that communicates some way. Now, we wrestled and wrestled and wrestled, and what we came up with, and I'm not claiming this is, you know, the grand inspiration and all there is, the best answer there ever was, and I probably would say, don't use that word because I picked it already. we called it, I just took the letters P-E-O-P-L-E, people, and made it into an acrostic that's people encouraging other people toward living effectively. And we call it a people class. Profound, right? but that's what we tried to do. And it, like I said, there's nothing that's particularly magical about that, but it was our effort to give that thing, that what we're going to do, some other handle and some other term, some other visibility other than, quote, lay counselor training. You may have your own ideas, whatever, but... an encourager? Mm-hmm. That's an excellent one. You're all aware, I think, of the encouragement class, the course that Larry has on video. We call it, he calls it counseling by encouragement, and we call it the ministry of encouragement. Again, we've dodged the word counseling. That's the way we advertise it.
It's interesting, yeah. Sure, you get two concepts of counseling. Counseling is the psychologist on the one hand, the other one says, I really don't want to go to camp.
Camp counselor. Okay, right. Yeah, the camp counselor versus the shrink. Yeah, okay. All right, yes, and you're...
Gordon.
Hi, Gordon.
Yep. As you look into the liability aspect when you started your counseling...
Yeah. Funny you should bring that up. matter of fact... Okay, the liability aspects of this whole thing. Yes, we looked into that. And our particular insurance policy assured us that as long as these folks were operating under the umbrella of a staff person in that ministry, under our direction, that they were covered by our church's liability policy. And thankfully, we haven't had any problems. Not to say we may never have problems, but so far, so good. And that's how we tried to handle that thing. But that's a big subject. As you're well aware, there's a lot of things going on in that whole area. Yes, somebody want to fire on that? Yeah. Right. The fees become important. What you represent yourself to be is a big one. Okay. If you represent yourself to be the pro, you don't deliver the goods in some fashion, one of your lay counselors blows his assignment and you have some difficulty that occurs as a result of that, and you represented yourself to be super confident, then you're more likely to encounter difficulty. Right. And that's an important... Right. Now, Oregon, where we're from, has no licensing of counselors. I mean, anybody on the street could put a little sign in his window and call himself a counselor, and the state wouldn't have a thing to say about it. Right? Other states are not quite that loose. Right. Yeah. So you have to be careful about what you represent yourself to be, and certain terms are legally defined, and in certain requirements, et cetera, et cetera. So you have to watch all that. Yes, in the back. I think in some ways that could. That raises some other issues, though, about counseling in your home, what you're doing and who you're doing it with and all that.
But yeah. Right, and that's one of the ways they would define whether the church is involved directly. Yeah. Okay, maybe a couple more here, we'll take a break, okay? Yeah.
Also to add to that, it depends on like, realizing churches that the council is kind of going on. And you're just like a body of the church, and you don't put a title on the council, you're dealing with these problems. The problem is having this thing, I am the council, you're not really viable.
Right. How you structure the relationships is real critical, what you represent yourself to be. There was a question over here. Yes.
Martin. The girl had on the paper.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that loose enough for her to be able to own a farm?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I would.
So is she liable at all? Then you can say, can that she trusts that?
Not directly. No. Not in that particular case, the one I'm thinking of. Yeah, there might be others. I mean, let's say someone had come to me and I felt that this gal was competent to help this individual, and I referred this counselee to this lady to have her help her. All right, that'd be a little different setup. Okay, that might be. Yeah, she's doing it whatever she wants to do with it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Bob. Okay. Straighten us out.
That's one of the reasons we have that data form. We explain also the confidentiality aspect. People who want counsel go out and have to sign a counsel and covenant.
Okay.
And that's why that's exactly what it's true. It's going to help you with the truth. And for them, it was also to test out the state leg because there are basically two major things that we have to expose to the state authority. We know the word lies. Third thing, for instance, if you find that there is serious violation of civil crime in the church, law according to scripture, you have to do the act of the
okay.
So they understand where we're coming from. So if we get pulled into a court, we have an initial document that says that they've already submitted to the church system.
Okay.
That's why I know Larry didn't take notes, but I always encourage him.
That's good. So, what you represent yourself to be, and how you structure that thing from the beginning, what the expectations are established to be at the outset, critical points on the liability question.